Welcome to Reiki, balancing form and essence with Reiki master and host Phyllis Lei Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, balancing form and essence. We're starting a new year, and I'm going to start a new theme of the programs today. In the last weeks, I've talked a lot about Hawaii Tokata and what I would say, revisiting the beginnings of the Reiki community of today. For the next weeks, I have asked some of the people in our, in what I would call our Reiki community, to share with us their viewpoints, which I consider to be a bit larger than our local community and larger than perhaps even the people that are, that we know in our Reiki community, but to look at this as a movement. Several people have talked to me over the years about and asked me, you know, what is my vision for Reiki in the future? What do I see this community bringing to the world? And I thought that these questions would be really a wonderful way to start our new year. So I've invited for this week Jürgen Kindler, who I met in the early 1980s, and at that point he was a very young, vivacious man, and who plunged himself into this Reiki practice, but which was very new in Germany at the time, everywhere, actually. And eventually he founded the German language bimonthly, not bimonthly, but
Quarterly.
Quarterly, thank you, magazine, German language magazine called the Reiki Magazine. And this has been published now for the last 11 years. Jürgen, welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you very much for the invitation.
I mean, sorry, I kind of stumbled over that. I realized that that was an inaccuracy in my little e-card thing. And Jürgen had a very important influence on me because, you know, when we first started, when I first started practicing and teaching Reiki in the 1980s, there was only really one practice that we knew of, and that was from Hawaii Tokata. And in the first years of the 1980s, as masters, we, you know, imbued this teaching with our own style, with our own considerations and concerns. And in some way, we shifted and altered the presentation of Reiki to suit ourselves and to suit the communities that we were serving. Eventually, by the 1990s, it was clear to people that we were shifting away from Hawaii Tokata's original teachings in the sense of what you taught and what the message was that was being given to Reiki students around the world. So I was asked to go back to her form as much as possible and to be able to articulate that to the rest of the Reiki community, which I did. So the 1990s were kind of, for me, a kind of confused time because people didn't know what the word traditional meant, they didn't know what the word original meant, they didn't know where Reiki came from, and there was lots of creativity, I would say. Now, as we have entered a new millennium in the 2000s, this confusion has settled down and we're looking at more of a peaceful coexistence with each other and realizing that there's definitely more than one way to present Reiki. There's definitely more than one way to practice Reiki. And even though these differences sometimes seem really large, There are also enormous and very deep similarities to these. And Jürgen has been my mentor for all these years in keeping an equilibrium of seeing that each of the steps of this process could be held peacefully and without defensiveness. And this I've really appreciated over the years, Jürgen. So it's one of the reasons why I wanted to start with Jürgen and just ask you for yourself, in your own words, how you, what was it like for you at the beginning of when you took Reiki and whenever that was, and then as you began to notice people practicing a bit differently, what was that like for you?
Well, at first I was just a regular, quote-unquote, Reiki student, and I only practiced what I was given. So I didn't really, for the first several years, get that there's other Reiki styles in the world. And in Europe, it was the first few years very homogeneous, as opposed to the States, as I, at least I believe so. And so it took a longer time before it got to Europe. And still, when it, all this happened, I still was in a more closer community, and all the other things around this community, and I didn't get too much in touch. But when it happened, I always tried to, I always knew that there, that the people who are doing it differently do it from their own perspective, and they are doing it out of a good intention. So when other people were got into confrontation, they do it differently. I don't like it. They don't do it my style. They do like Reiki initiation within a day, the whole first degree in a day, and not in a weekend as it is taught. And so they got defensive and they thought about this, about being right or being wrong. And I always came from, they have good intentions. And so I talked to them. I interviewed them when I did my the Reiki magazine or other former different magazines. I interviewed them and said, well, why do you do this? Well, why? What do you think? What is your experience? And what is what you get out of this change? Or do you know that this is a change? So this was my motivation to keep people talking to each other.
And was that the motivation for the Reiki magazine?
Well, before the Reiki magazine, there was another magazine which was the Reiki Masters newsletter, so to say. And this one was more about being in touch and being in talk to each other. So, and with that, there was like no editor's choice. I just put in what came in. And so people were confronted, and the readers were confronted with lots of different styles. But at least it was first-hand information. Before that, it was like, I heard that there's a master that heard about a master who's doing it differently, and I don't like it. And so it was like this, no direct communication. So I went to this master and said, well, why do you do this? And what's your experience? And I printed it. And then people started to print, to send in things about different styles. And so I printed it. Later in the magazine, this was more geared towards students. So, and students are not so much into different styles. They have their own experience. They practice Reiki. And they have a slightly different focus, in my perspective, than Reiki masters do.
Yes, I agree. And so, what was their? Do you find that the Reiki students themselves are? I mean, I would say that they might be more apt to be ecumenical rather than trying to find the right way.
Yes, I think so. Because as a Reiki master, you have to do a choice where you want to learn. And also this has to do with money. like in the traditional way, you have to give a big amount of money, bigger than most people have in their pockets. Mm-hmm. And so it's for them it is a very, very hard decision sometimes, and a very conscious decision to choose whether in which lineage they want to learn.
Well, it's been a very interesting time, and out of that period of time, how do you see this changing through the last two decades, if at all?
Yeah, I just had a thought when you introduced myself and said that Reiki changed from the 90s or the 80s to the later time. And I actually think that Reiki changed always, because the first change happened, maybe, we don't know really, from Usui to Hayashi, and then also from Hayashi to Takata. As far as we know how Reiki was practiced in Japan, it is different than what we do in the Western world.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it's ever-changing, and I think we have, maybe now in hindsight, we can more get into this, that Reiki is changing, and also Reiki has a form, and the form is important. And also it's changing, people always have a common experience of Reiki. And that is a dynamic I find very mind-blowing sometimes. So I can't, maybe I don't like that someone really does teach Reiki in a way I would consider not being respectful,
uh-huh.
like on a toilet, on an airport, giving
uh-huh.
an initiation. I think it should be more respectful. Still, the person who got initiated in this way can have the most wonderful Reiki experiences, and as a student, we shared.
Yeah.
And you know, this is a miracle with Reiki that Reiki doesn't care how it got taught.
Uh-huh.
To some extent, and sometimes it cares.
Yeah. Well, it is mind-blowing, because I think that in the beginning, when people really got very defensive about form and so on, that it became obvious that the first place that people went to was, well, they're not going to get something, or, you know, if you don't do it this way, you'll be missing something.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience is that they may miss something, but they also are given something else that doesn't come with my practice. So it stretches my mind to be able to hold paradox in such a profound way.
And as in every spiritual practice, Reiki has lots of paradoxes. And the people want to solve them, to find the right way. But with paradoxes, there is no right way.
Right. And it's time for our first break. We're going to come back to a discussion of paradoxes after this. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Awakened Media for a Transforming World. Seventh Wave Network.
Have you heard of resonance repatterning? Your own vibrating patterns of energy affect everything in your life. Your habits, actions, thoughts, how you feel, the kind of people and jobs you attract or don't attract. Join Chloe Faith Wordsworth every Wednesday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific for Living in Tune. Turn your problems into joy and for a whole new understanding of yourself and the self-healing that is possible through resonance repatterning. Living in Tune, Turn Your Problems into Joy is heard each week on the Seventh Wave Network.
Are you looking for for more than just pop culture astrology? Do you have questions about astrology and what it's all about? Join us every week for Sirius Star Talk, an inside look at the field of astrology and how it influences our world. Host Norma Jean Ream wants to create a voice for intelligent astrology. We'll explore current events through the lens of astrology with some of today's most knowledgeable astrologers. You'll get great information about politics, economics, business, and social trends. Sirius Star Talk can be heard every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the 7th Wave Network. Listen to the intelligent side of astrology.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And I'm here with Jürgen Kinsler, who is from, at this moment, Frankfurt, Germany. He's been a longtime student of Reiki from the early 1980s. And we were just speaking about how Reiki began, our Reiki practice began with everybody, in theory, practicing the same form, and then how that's been creatively expanded, and how those creations come from someone's heart and someone's wanting to do better, and somehow someone's wanting to make Reiki available for other people, and that these good motivations have created a very wide spectrum of possibility for people. While at the same time, the experiences that people have as they take Reiki on for their own personal practice, these experiences seem to be very similar or what we might call the same. So this is a great paradox. And I think that one of the gifts that this practice has to offer me as a human being and offer my students is this great practice of holding paradox. Would you say that was true, Jürgen?
Yes. I think that's, I would say that is one of the gifts that the practice has.
Uh-huh. And where do you think that's
because I think for other people it's totally different. It depends on where someone is and where what the lesson is for someone.
Uh-huh. So you don't think that this quality of paradox is evident just in any practice of Reiki?
I would say it's evident actually in every spiritual practice at some point.
Uh-huh.
Because it challenges the linear mind. And, you know, people usually think, like, if I do this, then this happens. And I don't say that this is not true, because the mind gives us the possibility to handle the world in different ways, which are very effective. And so we have the richness and the efficiency in dealing with different things.
Uh-huh.
And this I'm saying as a programmer and a computer who knows, you know, how far a mind goes. But there's another world for me where mind is not suitable or not the right tool to work with. And Reiki and all other spiritual things reminds us that there are other things. And this is not linear working.
So in the word paradox, there's this sort of, there is this, what can I say, intimation, or it implies that there is, there are two things that are opposite. And what's interesting, just in your explanation, or you're speaking about this linear world, and then I had this image of, in my mind, if I could turn around from that linear world and look back along the line, would I see something that was more global, that my mind could only express in a totally different way?
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah, so that it becomes actually, if we could use this old image, two sides of a coin rather than, and you can see them as opposite sides of a coin, or you can just see them as the same thing but in different perspectives.
Yeah, actually the coin metaphor is a good thing because, you know, if you only look at one side, you only see one side, but there's always the other side, and that's the same as paradoxes. Now, one paradox I like is Reiki goes to where it is needed. And everyone had had the experience that this is true, because, you know, I give Reiki on the head, and the person says, oh, it's heat comes up in my liver, for example.
Right.
But still, we do have hand positions.
Right.
If the first one would be true, we wouldn't have hand positions, because you would do only one wherever, and it would go wherever, Reiki would go where it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in every Reiki practice, it's practice paradox.
Well, it's interesting because I used to question my grandmother a lot when she taught her first degree classes of, how can you say this? Do you really want people to know this if you're teaching hand positions? Because if they know that Reiki will go where it's needed, then will they actually practice the hand positions? And I realized that these questions really frustrated her. Of course, I never got an answer, but which frustrated me. But what I saw in the students was that her willingness to teach very clearly hand positions and then to say at the end of each class, and Reiki will go where it's needed, or let Reiki teach you, this allowed me to expand my mind to see that there was much more than just these hand positions, and yet these hand positions were important. So this was the beginning of my struggle with this quality we're calling paradox.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, in looking at this viewpoint of, you know, all these different forms of Reiki lined up, and allowing different people to meet a practice that appeals to them or comes across their path at the right moment and leads them into very similar experiences, can we take two or three steps back from that and see this as a movement? I don't quite know what the definition of movement is in this case for myself. I'm thinking that in the 1960s, well, there has been in the 1900s a series of events that have happened, I think, in our society. One was technology, and then faster and more immediate communication, and, you know, all these different things that have happened in our industrial age, and that eventually what happened was that people began to see that, for instance, there were more religions than one, and that sometimes the religion that they were brought up with didn't fit them, so then they tried to find another way of coming to their spirituality. And I think this came to a head in the 1970s and 80s, where many of my generation were looking for an explanation as to how our existence happened, how it is maintained, and what our connection is with our spirit. And Reiki came into this particular movement and in some way got snatched up by it and used by this movement of spiritual seeking, I would say. So when I talk about movement, I think I'm talking about something that has come like a wave, which is a natural result of what has been happening in the past, and that it was, and somehow that this philosophy or practice or whatever you want to call it has touched people in a way, in many ways, and created a shift in our social interactive process. I don't know if this is too wordy, but I'm just wondering, so I would call what we're engaged in right now a movement, a social movement of sorts, and I'm wondering if you would agree with me.
That's different answers to this question. So to answer the question about the social movement, I think it's... there are parts of in those days, quote unquote, where we met, for example, in the 80s, and there was a group of people who shared common values, and they brought together a Reiki community, a Masters community, and are still doing this partly. And in those days, it was for most of them possible to live from the Reiki income they had, and in these days, it's not possible. For lots of them, as far as my experience goes. So that changed. And but these people, this group of people share common values of ecologics and how to be with each other, how a community should work, and so on. But Reiki also got into totally different communities in society. And they wouldn't mix because they believe totally different things than this one community I just talked about. So I think Reiki spread out through the whole society, to every community you can think of doctors, of scientists also, or scientist women maybe, and all other people. And I think one of the reasons there are so many variations of Reiki is that everyone can find a master who is teaching them. Because with the, I think sometimes socially with the old group, it wouldn't be possible to reach that far into society.
So is there a Reiki movement in the world?
It's a subcurrent.
Pardon me?
It's a subcurrent. So, you know, it's not a big wave. It, you know, when you're on the beach, you have a big wave.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes back and gets smaller, but it's still there. And I think we're in the smaller but still there and also much broader way. So Reiki is, you know, people do Reiki just as a weekend workshop and maybe then forget it, and maybe they do it only once a month or once a year or only when they are ill and so on. That's different than in the old days where you felt like, oh, it's a burning thing. And that's okay that it's that way. But In that way, it's spread out more.
Interesting. Well, I think that we are due for a break, but I'm not quite sure. So I will just sign off for now, and we'll come to using point and come back to this. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Awakened Media for a Transforming World. Seventh Wave Network.
200 years ago, Lewis and Clark discovered the West. That is, if you don't count the millions of American Indians who discovered it first. Because Lewis and Clark left one civilization only to find dozens of others that, despite everything, are still here today. Walk with Lewis and Clark at lewisandclark200.org and see what you discover, because their trail winds through us all.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
Are you looking for an open and honest psychic radio show? One that puts everything on the table and pushes the envelope? Are you looking for a psychic radio show that goes beyond spirituality in an entertaining and educational way? Well, check out Christina Predicts. This radio program is where the psychic meets Romper Room. In addition to Christina's readings, we'll discuss soulmates, energy, clairvoyance, feng shui, and much more. Christina Predicts is heard every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Seventh Wave Network.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Forimoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Jürgen Kinsler, and we're talking about a question, is there a Reiki movement in the world, and is what do we mean by Reiki communities, and what is the gift that Reiki, the practice of Reiki, brings to us as members of a society and also as individuals? So we've touched on paradox, and now we're into subcultures, but subcurrents. And it's really interesting because when you were talking about the wave, so I wanted to get this kind of clear. When we talk about the wave, there is this wave that goes back. It's like the wave comes up to the beach and then comes back. And sometimes that backward motion is called an undertow, and it pulls people out into the ocean and kind of drowns them usually. So I'm just wondering, that's not what you meant by subcurrent, is it?
No.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
So could you talk about the subcurrent more?
You know, in 10 years ago, maybe Reiki, Reiki was coming into public consciousness. So there are lots of articles about this, and a million of books, well, not a million, but hundreds in Germany, and magazines talked about it, and so on. It was sometimes even in television, and so it was much in public awareness. Now, in my perspective, public awareness, at least in Germany, goes down. There are public awareness about spiritual things. Meditation, yoga, and everything is still going up, but Reiki is not that present. So I think the big wave of public awareness is going back. But I think there are a lot of people practicing Reiki more than ever. And they don't talk about it. So, you know, I have students and heard about students who say, well, after 3 years, I found out that my friend in the office is doing Reiki, but we never talked about this because we don't talk about those things at the job.
Right. Well, you know, it's so interesting. I agree with you about this whole movement in the 1990s about publications and definitely out in the public awareness. And one of the things that has been interesting that has happened, I think, in the last about 10 years or so, is this reemergence, I would say, or connection back to Japan with Reiki. And one of the things that happened, of course, in Japan is that, as I know it, I will put that disclaimer on it, that there was an association that was formed to preserve Mikao Usui's teaching as it was in those days. So this became a kind of secret, not a kind of, it became one of the traditional Japanese kind of secret societies that held something very precious. And in doing that, the secret was not because they were trying to withhold it from the public, but they wanted to be sure that people would be trustworthy and would maintain this practice in a way that honored, with the big H, Mikao Usui. And out of that whole thing, what trickled down to me through my own Japanese inheritance, and some of this was verbal and some of it was nonverbal, is that when you practice Reiki, you don't really talk much about it. You just do it. And it becomes an inner movement in yourself. So when at the end of her teaching, when my grandmother would teach, people wanted, for instance, to have big gatherings of Reiki students, like in the San Francisco area or in British Columbia, where she taught a lot. And she really did not like them. For her, it was kind of an antithesis. You came together in the class, you shared something so profound as having this experience of receiving Reiki initiations and this practice, and then you went out and you were just private about it. It wasn't something that you talked to each other about. It wasn't something that became a kind of T-shirt that you wore, although that happened right at the end of her life. She liked it because it meant that Reiki was spreading, and at the same time, it was spreading outward to the public, which for her, I think there was a kind of paradox about enjoying that and at the same time kind of flinching at how public people were in talking about their own experiences of Reiki. So yeah. This was a fascinating place for me to watch.
Well, this whole dynamic with Japan I found very interesting. Now, I feel when you just talked about how Takata taught Reiki, it's how it was in the Japanese society and how it came up. That's how I, you know, how she taught it and taught it, and how I understand that the original Reiki was held.
Uh-huh.
It is what I call Japanese.
Uh-huh.
But still, you know, Reiki came actually the most profound way how it got more to the public was through America. So.
Right.
Sometimes I say, and you know, Americans are not Japanese, and they don't, most people don't hold it in the Japanese way. Also, lots of them are fascinated by it. But, for example, they talk, of course. And so I think, you know, Reiki appeared in Japan and wanted to spread. You know, I heard that Takata said, I want this to be a public practice.
A household word.
Yeah. And
that's
becoming true.
Yes, definitely.
And the way it was taught in those days wouldn't be suitable for all the people.
Right.
So I think it was intrinsic in Reiki that it healed itself to get out to the public.
Wonderful. And for a lot
and
of people...
For me, it's important that, you know, people, this is, or that groups like the Mr. Usui Gakkai, who held it in, or still holds it in that way, and people like you who hold it in this way as close to the Hawaii Takata practice as possible, it's important to that are people there who do it that way that people can relate to when they need this kind of medicine.
Uh-huh. That's a great way to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So, you know, I found an interesting dynamic in Japan is that almost no one knew about the old style of Reiki. How got Reiki back into Japan? Through the Westerners. And now the Reiki people practice Westerners Reiki. The Japan people practice Westerner Reiki, which I found a cosmic joke to some extent.
It's true. I mean, it's totally true because, you know, up until like 15 years ago when I first went to Japan, I just thought I had this very strong sort of, not sort of, I had this very strong idea that though I don't know the Japanese language and I've just had this very trickle of the Japanese culture come down through my family, that I had this idea that all the values that I was taught as a Japanese child were intrinsic and very closely held within the Japanese society. And when I went over there and found out that that wasn't true, it just kind of shattered something inside of me. And then I realized that we're all people. And it doesn't matter what culture you come from. There's something about Japan wanting to be modern, wanting to be right up front, wanting to be as to date, up to date as possible. And I feel that this is the draw to have this Westerners Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating for me. So what I've learned in my next thoughts have been is that this practice of Reiki has brought us back to some really fundamental experiences, and that is of being human, I will say, fundamental experiences of being human. So most often now, although I, in my own mind, label it as a Japanese healing art, I see that the healing is in some way that this Japanese healing art has gone around the world and is teaching all of us to be human.
Mm-hmm.
To realize that we all hold very similar values of life and of what success is and what peace is and what human beings are really searching for in their life here on Earth. And this, for me, is a huge and beautiful gift for our society.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that it makes a difference. does that follow with your own perspective?
Yes, that does follow, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you going to say something back there when I got carried away?
No. As far as I know, I've said everything I wanted to say.
Uh-huh. So when we are going to pursue this a little bit further, so for me, a person, Michael Hartley, who we have past lives, he was obviously a Japanese person in a past life many, many times. And he said to me once, he said, well, you know, the gift that Reiki has brought to me in my life and I think will bring into the lives of all students is that everything is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And that this quality of understanding and experiencing everything is sacred will shift a perspective of the world, of human beings in the world, that will be evident in the way that we live our lives. And I have seen that in my own students and in the students that I've come across in all these different cultures, that this is really one of the fundamental teachings of a practice that has been explored in many ways. Would you agree with that, and do you have something else to add to that?
I just thought about, you know, what I said beforehand, that for people who have a linear mind, for them it's to break that, or to have a personal experience that linear thinking is not everything which is out there.
Uh-huh.
So I would rather put it in a different way. I would say Reiki touches people, and how it's doing it and what it means to the person is totally personal.
Uh-huh.
So for Michael, it might be, you know, this, that he has this insight. And of course, because he has his students and has his friends, they all share his values. But
uh-huh.
for another community, you have different values. This might not be the point. But still, those people would be touched by Reiki.
Uh-huh.
But their touching would be different. And they would
uh-huh.
phrase it differently.
Uh-huh. And it would be really wonderful if we could somehow collect all these fundamental gifts that Reiki has given people somehow into some kind of central point where we could look at the whole. But maybe that's just my longing as a human being to see every perspective, which I don't know if that is a gift of Reiki, to see every perspective. Well, what do you think about that? Do you think that's necessary for us to understand or to know what other people feel are the gifts that have been given them through Reiki?
I think it would be interesting to have a very open circle and to have to listen to people what they have to say, because I think it would be sometimes very different, depending,
uh-huh.
you know, and also there might be some, you know, if a group is coming together, it might be, and the Reiki master is asking them, their students, they would share the same values, so it would be the same, but I think it will be different, what it means. For some people, it's just bodical healing of the body, very, very profound, maybe in what they had. And, you know, it's not, their healing didn't, or their being touched is not so much on the inside level.
Uh-huh.
I think it's very different.
Uh-huh. So I didn't take that into consideration, that there are also different aspects, like, there's the physical healing and the emotional healing and the spiritual healing, and in some way a kind of philosophic process that also happens.
Yeah, well, I think if one has longer with Reiki, he asks himself, who am I, you know, where are my fellows are going, and he's going to philosophy. But for lots of students, it's just, I had a phobia and now it's gone. And Reiki did it.
Uh-huh.
That's a Reiki experience, an emotional level. For others, it's a body healing. For others, it's some insights they had. I got a new job. Now I'm more whole in my new job.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that's a very good point. So as the practice of Reiki has spread throughout the world and through all these different cultures and has touched each individual, each of these touchings is individual. and yes. is in that moment a gift that is unique in some because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, bound in the culture. So, in the Japanese culture, it would be different. People would express it differently if they express it at all. But if they would express, they would express it differently. And in the States, it would be differently because it's very different from, let's say, some countries in Europe and how people think life is and what's important there.
Yeah, but and to sum this all up, for me, one of the most amazing and miraculous things that happens through this practice, even though we can acknowledge that each of these moments of gift, if I may put it that way, are unique, there is this very fundamental, similar experience of gratitude, of peace, of wholeness in the moment. All these things that human beings seek, we are given in some way through this practice.
I agree.
And this is something that always creates this feeling of understanding the immensity or the enormity of what I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
for me also, you just said the four aspects, and there are the elements, and one of the aspects is mystic order, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, in the last years, this has become one of the possibilities to look directly into the unspoken parts of Reiki. Not the secret ones or so on, but the parts who are not easily to be talked about in Reiki,
mm-hmm.
community. So when we do like Reiki treatments in the groups, like in Germany and Gersfeld at the Reiki student gatherings, that is really for me a different and very moving and very nurturing event.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it gives us a kind of depth and breadth of what's
yeah.
possible together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a closing thought, do you have one for our listeners?
When you brought up that, what is the movement it brings into society, I'm curious how, all those lights now, who have Reiki in society, like in Germany we have about 82 million people living here, and maybe, I think, 30 million now are touched by Reiki. They heard about it, maybe they don't practice anymore, they have got a Reiki treatment and so on. I'm wondering what is happening when so many people have, this kind of knowledge about it. And I'm looking forward for the next 10 or 15 years when Reiki is, when the seed is growing more and more. And maybe at one point 80% of the society have know about Reiki. Oh, that will be interesting.
Well, I just got goosebumps. And I felt like my mind just went to a place that I couldn't imagine it. And numbers, thank you for your linear part of you, really bring it home.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you about the numbers, and I think that in most of the Western European countries, that's true. I mean, maybe in Holland, you're looking at, it would not be a quarter, but say 30 million people. But in Holland, I would say half of their population, or maybe over half of the population of Holland, have been touched by Reiki. maybe even more. So it's an amazing thing to think about, 80% of the world population. Well, thank you for being a part of this Touched by Reiki population, Jürgen. And thank you, listeners, for being a part of this population. And imagine what will happen in the future. We'll be back next week with Paul Mitchell. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the 7th Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.